As we approach Anzac Day, we remember them. They are the courageous, the resilient, and the resourceful. They are the men and women who risked their lives and raised their families during a time of scarcity and incredible uncertainty. From Kapiti to Horowhenua and beyond, these are the stories of everyday New Zealanders in extraordinary times. These are the Anzac Vignettes.
My first name is Hector, and P.H. Davis, D-A-V-I-S, not Davies. I'm at this moment 101, right? And I was born in West Ham. When war started, I was in Colchester. Well, I was actually on Mersey Island, which is south of Colchester, about 8 miles, when war was declared here. And I stayed there for a while, expecting us to be, or especially London, to be bombed, because we had a holiday place on the coast, and it wasn't bombed. So I preferred my old school in London, in West Ham, to the one in Colchester. So I returned to London, and I've been there 3 weeks, and then London was bombed. And so much so that I went to where the school had evacuated on the boundary of Cornwall and Devon. I think it was called Laugheton, the town I was in. I wanted to be a draftsman, and I was a draftsman with the Ordnance Survey, and that was in Chelsea in London, and I worked there until I was called up for the army, and then I was located first of all close to a major town in England, where England joins Wales. There was a Satan camp there, which I went to, and then I went to my Ordnance Survey army unit, which was the 515 Field Survey Company. And when we went to Normandy, about a month after D-Day, because the number of troops they had to get across there meant that it took a couple of months to get them over there. So I went over there, I think 3 weeks after D-Day, and I went to a place south of Bayeux and a town called Caen, which I had expected to capture in the first week and failed to. The Americans were further west than we were, the British on the east and the Americans on the west. And so the Germans were sort of closer to us in a way than to the Americans. So the Americans were able to break south, and they eventually came to Paris, and the Americans, and then they pushed north, and then the British went north, but we were always further north than the Americans. There was a pylon on there, electricity pylon, quite a high one. I wasn't too good on heights. I wanted to challenge myself, so I climbed up this pylon and got up near the top. I had a driver, a 1500 weight truck, and the driver stayed at the bottom, and I was like going up this, and then there was a rifle shooting, or bullets were being fired, and I didn't know whether they were being fired at me. Anyway, I descended fairly quickly, And when I got there, then my driver had driven away because he heard the firing and he thought he was going to be shot. So I didn't have a driver for a while. I made my way back towards the British side and then the driver came and picked me up. But we were located, first of all, south of the Bayeux Caen towns, and then we were driving the Germans back. We were there probably 3 or 4 weeks, and then we drove them back. We were then on the, as it were, left side, and the Americans had come down and were on our right-hand side. And we stayed one night, sort of around about 50 miles northeast of Normandy. And we stopped there one night. Then we went on to Brussels, my company. The Germans had moved out of a garage, a Renault garage, in the morning, and we moved in the afternoon. And and I was on guard duty the first night. I would be on guard duty. But as it turned out, it was very fortunate because the people, the Belgian people living off-site, came over and invited a couple of us who were on guard duty to go over their place after we'd come off duty. And their name... the two brothers married two sisters, Overstans, they were the brothers, Overstans, and the sisters, I've forgotten their name, but the sisters came from sort of southeast Belgium, and the brothers came from Brussels itself, because Belgium sort of goes southeast, northwest. I then got to speak in French from going over to these people every night almost, and so I could communicate with them in French after a while, quite fluently. We had done French at school, but it wasn't a real learning the language. Learning the language, you have to go there.
Mm.
But it's an artificial way of learning it in school. And I decided then that doing school French or any other language than English in an English school really is not a good idea so much. Because you don't really learn the language until you can speak it. And when you are a baby, you hear only the language of your family. Mm. And so you learn to speak that language. So if you spend a lot of time with people, you can pick it up. So I picked up French so I could speak fluently Belgian French. When the war had sort of finished, as soon as I got an opportunity, I transferred from the Royal Engineers to the Army Education Corps. And I then received information about courses and so on. And there was a course in Paris, so I put myself on the course. And after the course was finished, which is a week's course, I decided to go and find my cousin Claude's grave. And I went to Mailly-le-Camp and found his grave. There was no stone there then, but just a mark with his name on. And it was the end of a cemetery. His was the last grave there. After that, they did erect the standard army graves with his name on in full and so on. I got married in 1939 when the war ended, and I was still in the army. And I got a picture at home of my army uniform of my wedding in Stratford in London, East London. And I regretted not learning German, because I think German really is closer to English than what French is. My wife came down when she qualified as a teacher and came down to live in a house where I lived. We had a house with my aunt, my father's sister, and her husband. Quite a large house on a large section. They've got a 9-storey block of flats on that section now today, because they pulled our house down, put this block of flats on there. And so I lived there, and I went to secondary school in West Ham, which is equivalent to a grammar school. It was called West Ham Secondary School. And strangely enough, they've now relocated that to the site of the primary school I went to. And which is quite interesting. But, it's your particular body and how it works. And I think from a sort of mental point of view, to be feel good about life and what you could do and what you could achieve. You have to accept your limitations, and I think most of all is to care for people, and especially people in need, and to do what you can for them, for their benefit. And I think you get, at least I do, get satisfaction from that.
You've been listening to the Anzac Vignettes on Coast Access Radio. This year, the street appeal for the RSA Poppy Day is on Friday the 17th of April. Volunteers will be at high traffic locations such as supermarkets, shopping centres and transport hubs throughout our region. You can view the Poppy Portrait photo exhibition at the Waikanae Library throughout April. May we remember them.